I want to introduce a guest today, though, who's agreed to come on and spend some time with us. I know I guarantee every one of you on this call and most people in the West, in the free world, have seen him on videos in 2006. Finale to his comedy routine went viral, and to date has, I don't know, he can straighten out the number, but well over a million hits on different video sites, YouTube, blogs, everywhere else. He took his an act he did to a number of Beatles tunes, Golden Slumbers, Carry That Weight, and The End by the Beatles, and put together a juggling routine that he did in live concerts with Michael Jackson all over the world, and then went viral with his performance at the Just for Laughs Festival. So that video started being passed over blogs and emails, and he was hit with an outrageous bill for excessive bandwidth, and that was just about the time when YouTube was becoming popular. So I want to make the microphone live and welcome Chris Bliss. You hear Chris?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Hey, Chris. Welcome, yeah. Man.
Because I was mocking everything that you were saying while the microphone wasn't live. And
Which is exactly why I told Sarah to keep the red X through it, because, man, I know. And now that it's open, I'm expecting all that mocking to come to life.
Yeah, I mean, what do they need a boot camp? I mean, a Swiss Army knife, that's all you need. The only tool
you can do anything.
Toolbox.
Yeah, it's got every tool.
You're going to run into.
And you can get gigs with a Swiss Army knife. So, hey, so would you briefly tell that story of when you found out that your video, that you were big?
big for a small period of time. It was January 2006. I started getting little emails in my inbox, like two or three a day, saying, hey, saw your video, very cool. The video had been sitting on a corporate website since 2002. So I had no idea how it was getting passed around initially at all. And I thought, oh, that's nice. A few people have found it and they're passing it around. Viral videos were, I mean, very, very new at that point. And then the two or three a day became, you know, more and more and more. And I thought there was something that was going to, you know, go up for 3 weeks and go down for 3 weeks and go away, you know, just because who could possibly anticipate anything like that? And it just kept going and going and going. And the thing that you were talking about, the third month, my server gets shutting down all the time. By March, my server started shutting down all the time from excess capacity. They tried to move it to different servers, and they kept shutting down no matter what. They all say unlimited capacity, and then they have a little thing in parentheses that says up to 2% of our total load or whatever it is.
It really redefines unlimited, yeah.
So a friend of mine, you may know him, Barry, Wayne Cotter.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Really, really good comedian. Told me, he says, I've got a friend who's got, I've always suspected that the majority of this guy's business was porn because it was on-demand streaming, unlimited bandwidth, and in 2006 that equaled porn. I don't know. I've never talked to him about it. But he said he's got a pipeline he can ensure that you actually will have the bandwidth. And in 1 month it was 40 terabytes of downloads. It was like $12,000. And then somebody called me and said, Chris, there's this thing called YouTube. And I, you know, being a more technically illiterate than I am now anyway, I wasn't really paying attention to it. And thank God, shifted it over there at the end of that. But the numbers now, who knows? You know, I'm still getting, it goes through different places. Now I'm getting autograph requests from Eastern Europe. So when it hits China, I'll be really glad I'm not paying for bandwidth.
I think Wikipedia had your total hits at around 150 million, but you know, who knows when that's updated. But yeah, it happens
that's great if that's on Wikipedia. I just put that on there. I didn't realize that it actually would make it past their filters.
Yeah, it's good. Well, you know, as Michael Scott said in The Office, you know Wikipedia is right because anyone can edit it. So that's the that's why.
So it has the wisdom of groups.
It really does, yeah. So,
but Barry, when you contacted me about this, the first thing that I thought, and I think I emailed it back to you, and it's much more true today than it was in 2006, is that as far as the passion stuff is great, and you have to, I mean, that's just the artistic process. You're constantly trying to re-identify that because that'll move around in your life also. And you'll do projects to succeed and projects that fail, but even the ones that fail, the worst thing I ever did in terms of not lack of success was a one-man show that I couldn't get arrested doing in Hollywood. I mean, I'd walk out night after night. There'd be 4 people, 8 people, 12 people. It was a great piece of writing. I never got to find the beats on it as a performer to where it was up. But after I spent 2 months feeling sorry for myself, after that, the writing of that show and the experience of being on stage and going through all of that really hard work of something not working, it made me absolutely fearless as a comic. I was no longer afraid of silence in the room. I was no longer worried about how an audience would judge certain pieces of material that I knew I was developing. And so on the surface, that was 2 years that resulted in a huge failure and everybody lost their money. But in the continuum of creativity, I've gotten more out of that experience than out of a lot of things that people would call successful, because success can also be something that just you get comfortable with and you decide, well, I'm making money. Why should I change? So the one thing I was going to say that's different today is the people in your group should be building the infrastructure so that it's in place, the social media infrastructure. So, you know, your mailing list, all this other stuff, just so if and when this thing that you're looking at does happen, you're ready, because that's the one chance you're going to get at those eyeballs.
Yeah.
You know, and the only place I had it in place was I was an established act in the corporate market. And for about 18 months, I was the act that everybody in the that all those guys wanted. So I was the it guy for 18 months.
Yeah.
But I didn't have constant contact or a Facebook page I didn't have any place to direct those eyeballs.
Yeah. And, I mean, look at, you're talking about 2006 and you're using words like pipeline and bandwidth. I mean, those weren't even words that people used in 2006. And you were introduced to them by accident almost and had to start doing them. And you had friends like Wayne Cotter or someone who, was also a comedian, but also had these ideas of how to handle that and then being hit with big bills. You were discovering this stuff when it was all just brand new, and now, what I hear you saying is there's good ways to be ready for it.
Well, not only that, but the technology is integrating itself a whole lot better than it ever used to. So people can find you who aren't even looking for you. But if something pops up where people are looking for you, you want to have absolutely all of that stuff to get them into your stream and keep them. For when the opportunity happens, if you wait until it happens and then start building it, you're going to lose the opportunity.
Well, yeah, well,
I had 80 million. I had 80 million or however many million downloads in the first 2 years, and I wound up with an email list of 7,000 people.
Incredible. Right.
You know. In my case, I'm fine. All gratitude about all of it. I was moving towards other things anyway. I was 50-some years old. I wasn't going to go join the circus again. I mean, that wasn't going to happen. But and for me personally, just the vicarious thing of getting all these emails from all over the world and no complaints there. But for the people that you're talking to at the point that they're in their careers and hello, everybody in the group, even if you think what a pain in the ass it is to maintain a Facebook page and why am I blogging and most of this is inane crap, if you're a writer of any kind, you have no excuse not to be blogging now. You have no excuse to go to somebody, well, I've got a book in my head. You should be creating it every day. You wind up with a content farm if anybody wants to come to your content in the future. So basically all these things that you're going, well, I I'm at a point in my career when I don't even have anything. Why should I be building these things when nobody's interested in me? And the reason is so that they're there when you develop to that point, you're already literate in all of this stuff. And if you have anything worth viewing, worth seeing, worth listening to, it's great to have. At this point, we're all in control of our own content. Information wants to be free and all that crap, but better make sure that you've got your information infrastructure organized if you intend to communicate to people.
No excuse. And we're going deep into that in the second half of this call today. And I just really thank you for sharing that. What I'd love to hear though. It takes a little more than a vision just to do this, and I really wanted to ask you some specific questions so that people could really see that, there are tangible changes. I mean, just you mentioned that for 18 months you were the guy everyone wanted, and I know, man, I can't even count the number of shows that we lost to you in those days, and I was like, oh, it's not even worth doing it. You're the guy. What did it specifically do to your appearance schedule and fee?
I just exploded it. The fee was already outrageous, so that just got maintained.
Yeah.
But, bumped up a little bit, but it just exploded the amount of bureaus and everybody else that knew. When people are looking for you, it's a great thing. And at that point, there was enough press and everything. So the short answer to that is that, at that point, and that data I did capture. If you're going to make a choice of what data to capture, the data you need to capture first isn't the people that think your eyes are blue. It's the people that want to hire you.
So yeah. I've got all that data captured. And I joined eSpeakers, which is a good speaking bureau marketplace thing and various mm-hmm. things, just to make sure that I was visible among that first layer of people who are going to help you pay your bills.
Right, so. Exactly. And, yeah, and of course, I mean, the great line in that is, you know, when people are looking for you as opposed to it's you being another person in the pile that's pushing. So, I mean, that's really the big piece I want to push into this is we spent the past couple of weeks, the guys looked at some things that they had passions for, and, yeah, and there's a great market out there always looking for leaders, or as, you know, as Seth Godin calls them, tribe leaders, and I want to really encourage people to do that, so. So, you know, one thing I know about you, Chris, from talking to you a lot about when this happened and also in doing an article with you about this, what other opportunities, there were so many other opportunities, things you had passion for in life that you were, it then gave you a platform to be able to step into and have a voice and have a, be able to talk to the decision makers in those worlds. What opportunities, would you mind sharing some of the opportunities that became available to you as a byproduct of this video?
Well, I had just started a nonprofit, which is a Bill of Rights monument project. And when you combine 220-year-old documents with the word monuments, that stops a lot of conversations. Oh, really? And do you speak Latin, too? No. No. So, I was trying to learn about nonprofit work and how it gets built and structured, and I had a couple amazing opportunities. I was invited to that. Your guys probably don't know who this is, but Sir Bob Geldof was speaking at it. Geldof was, there was Bono. He was an Irish rock star who started doing good in the world. He wrote Don't They Know It's Christmas, and wound up being this really, I mean, a Bono-like figure. When I saw him speak, he'd just gotten the European Union to agree to put together $25 billion to address root causes of poverty in Africa. So, and when you're playing at the $25 billion range, you know, you've obviously gotten somewhere. So I got to talk with Bono about how, and also hear him talk about, not Bono, with Geldof, about how he got to that point. The interesting part of how he got to that point was he just wanted to write a rock song to raise some money for hungry children that he saw on the BBC. He thought the rock song would probably generate £60,000 for Oxfam, and then he could go back to figuring out what to do next in his career. The rock song was Don't They Know It's Christmas, and it's $700 million in royalties later. He's Bono, you know?
Yeah.
So, but the point of the story was, and then I got to do an event with Paul Newman at his home in Waugang camps, all because of this. Well, I heard Newman's story from the guy who was his business partner in Newman's Own. Paul thought he made a good salad dressing, and he thought that he knew at least 8 delicatessens in New York and Connecticut that would put it on their shelves if he put his picture on the label.
Mm.
That became an engine for, I think now it's somewhere around $600 million in charitable giving. Well, the lesson's pretty clear here. One, just take the first step.
Yep.
And then your capacity and the lay of the land and your celebrity, if you have some, because both that's the one thing both these guys had, but neither one of them was on a path to create these massive engines for transfer of money to serious intractable problems.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And it was incredible to me, because if you start off to save the world, you're going to just sit on the couch thinking, well, how do I do that? These guys just started off going, I write good songs, I make good salad dressing, and next thing you know. Those two are the ones that stand out.
Yeah. And to bring that story back to your case, I mean, you were just doing something you had done in your act for how many years when that finally went out?
Well, I've been doing the juggling thing for like 30 years, and I've been doing stand-up for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I had a purely commercial interest at stake. When I got asked to do Montreal Festival, to do the French side of the festival, I'd done the English side of the festival as a comic, and I was doing it that year as a comic. And the guy from the French side of the festival, Gilbert Rozon, I think his name is, goes, I was on a tour in Canada. And the guy goes, Chris, this is beautiful. Will you please do your mark of trade at the French festival? That's for sure. Well, I knew that I had the only juggling tape that I had was from 1984 that was any good at all. I was using tapes of that performance from comedy clubs, from single cameras, tape hung up in a ceiling on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
And now I had the gray hair and everything, and I was thinking, my God, I'm going to get to walk onto this beautiful theater stage. Yeah. The Saint-Denis is about 2,500 seats. All I have to do is 5 minutes of something I've done for 30 years. I was so focused. But all I wanted was a good piece of tape for the website.
That's it, right.
You know? Because I figured this is the last chance I will physically get to do this right and have people see a really nice piece of tape with me with gray hair. You know, I mean, it was instead of something from 20 years ago, and it's like, who's that kid, you know, on opening for the Jacksons. So I was really, really, really focused when I walked onto that stage. And it was, I mean, that was also extremely lucky just to capture that particular performance and that particular, because you don't get a lot like that no matter how good you are, where it's just, wow, that was totally locked in. And guess what? The cameras were rolling. Wow, you know.
And the cameras are rolling. And yeah, and viral videos are about to become a word that people even say. And
yeah, and these days people eliminate the, you know, don't, please don't send me another email to my Facebook, another video to my Facebook page or email. Fortunately, back then, people were just deleting the jokes, and they wanted to look at the videos.
Yeah. It's interesting. And I still see videos going around that do have a message that catch on, and, you know, the numbers take off crazy like yours. It happens every day.
Well, playing for change is a good example.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and there's some.
You know, I mean, when you create an, I mean, the difference today, I would say, is that if it doesn't have a baby or an animal or an animal and a baby, you know, if it's got an, if it has interactive possibilities where people can contribute to that, to, you know, contribute to the comment thread sort of in a video way, then that's what draws people into this new technology, is that they get to participate in it.
Yeah, it is. It's very participatory. The whole. The whole piece of it. You know, it goes back to, you know, you did that piece you'd done for 30 years. Paul Newman made salad dressing. Bono wrote a song. And literally it comes back to doing something that, that belongs to us in a way. And sharing that from that place, with the world in some creative way. And it's certainly done with those three examples.
And in this Bill of Rights Monument Project, just to put a little bow on this, when I walked out of the state representative's office in Texas, who brought the project to the, who put it into a resolution in Texas to do something at the Texas State Capitol, which incidentally, if any of the people in your group are sitting on a trust fund or an inheritance, we need $4 million in Texas to build this thing now after 3 years of work getting it approved. But when I was walking out of this guy's office, the state rep, I said, yeah, I've been a little bit busy lately. I had this video on the internet, and it's kind of distracted me from this, but I'm trying. And he went, wait a minute. And he went, you're that guy? You know, so much better to be that guy after you're trying to talk to people about the monument than, yes, I'm Juggle Boy, and I'd like to talk to you about building monuments of the Bill of Rights.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So.
But it's been very interesting at how many people that video still gets passed around. I just had it in Everett, Washington. Somebody working on the project that we have up there said, somebody just sent me your video, and I went, yes, I know that guy.
I know that guy. I have his cell number. Yeah. As far as you know, did any of the Beatles ever see your piece? Side question.
Yes. The answer would be that Ringo put it on his website. I know for a fact that McCartney saw it. I toured with Julian Lennon. So.
Oh, nice.
And okay. I also was told that Harrison's widow saw it and really liked it. Though.
Mm.
I cleaned the table on that one.
Yeah. Good. Exactly. Got everyone kind of covered.
That was very exciting.
Yeah.
And hey, Ringo put it on his. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say Ringo put it on his website. I knew of somebody who saw it. Who I had a friend who just worked in his band. They said, I think Ringo'd like to see this. And I said, well, you know, I've been getting a call from. I got a couple calls from the lawyers saying, you know, that I'm publishing on the web and I don't have rights. And I told them I'm not. I just put it there. I'm not selling it. I'm refusing all offers. I know I don't have copyright for the music. So I get a call back from my friend a week later. It says, yeah, Ringo put it on. Ringo's got it on his site, and he said the next time that the record company calls you to tell them they should call him and tell him to take it off his site.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that, yeah.
So he became my favorite, coolest Beatle ever.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool. So, let's see. So, it's got some opportunities. Hey, do you think you're doing now this stuff with the Bill of Rights? I mean, this was obviously something that was inside you and had nothing to do with your juggling routine, but do you think that even having that routine on the air and having it get the success and introducing you to the people, is that still a reason you're able to be traveling around and doing this Bill of Rights monument project in all these states? Is there some continuing momentum from that?
Well, I mean, just the money in the bank helps, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, from a perspective that way. The other place that was really helpful was I got a first round of media that was not ostensibly about that, but I got to slip that project into it. So,
yeah.
You know, hopefully you're teaching your guys something that in this thing, Barry, that I never really had, which is I've never really been a strategic thinker in terms of what's the best strategy to get the message. To me, I was always focused on, you know, on what the message was, you know, what it was I was personally trying to discover. Not, and of course, if you have a discovery, and you don't have a strategy to communicate it, it's not. You might as well be sitting in a friggin' cave somewhere.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So I'm more on the art side of figure out what it is that needs to be said first, and then figure out how to say it later. And I think it's a much more efficient process if you are working on those two things at the same time. Even as a creative process, you know, you know it from my juggling, Barry. I'm not technically a skilled juggler. I don't do all the things that jugglers do.
I've never seen a Chris Bliss juggling workshop taking place.
Exactly. You know, I mean, I just was, you know, tennis balls in a dorm room with a black light and rock music and a couple other things were in that room. And, you know, so it wasn't driven by a very technical, if not anti-technical, approach to something. The same way as a writer, and I can tell you that, you know, outlines and deadlines for anything that you're doing, yeah, I wish I'd thought about those earlier, you know. I mean, it's not me as a person. You know, you can see how well I'm staying inside the lines of our discussion, Barry. You have to constantly pull me back. I'm totally a digressive individual. But outlines and deadlines, you don't have to obey all your deadlines, but you better have outlines and deadlines.
They really make
the process more achievable. And you can also measure yourself then.
That's right,
and
be accountable to yourself. I mean, these are all
And the last thing I would say is, from a creative point of view, it's never going to be perfect. And if you use that thing of perfection to just keep from completing things, you know, I mean, you take what you learned in that process, good and bad, and you take that on to the next thing, but you have to complete things.
And if you're just
waiting for it to be perfect, perfection is a lie in the creative world, probably every place else too, I guess. But so don't fall into the trap of, well, I would finish this, but it's not perfect yet.
Yeah, it's a wonderful excuse to not finish, though, and to be lazy and to keep ourselves, So, hey.
Come on, Barry. You never worried about perfection. I've seen your act.
That's true. And certainly in the later years, I mean, I got way over perfection, way over it. It's a great excuse, and that's about where its power ends. Hey, are you up for a couple questions if anyone has one for you, Chris?
Sure.
You got a few more minutes? Cool. We got most of the mics open. I think one was left. Oh, no, Sarah has them all open. Anyone has some? Just speak up.
This is Benjamin. Can you give me a quick sense of the story of what your video is, actually very briefly, the one that went viral?
Really? All right. I'll send it to you. I'll put it up on the group. You may be the only person who hasn't seen it or maybe you haven't realized
it. No, I may have seen it. I just don't know if I have seen it.
it's a 4-minute juggling routine all set to music by the Beatles, and it's just as, you know, it was a finale performance I'd been doing for years, and that's the best way I know how to describe it. It was my finale piece, and it got out there, and it was such a well-realized performance of that particular piece that it started getting passed around because people were also excited about viral videos in those days. But that's all.
You know? Good, yeah.
But I would also have to say, I mean, I say that's all. It's probably the best single piece, probably the best single 4 minutes of that I don't know if I've ever done a better performance of that particular thing, so it was very fortunate to have it be captured.
Yeah, we could say it's lucky if you hadn't been doing that routine for 30 years. Then it would have been lucky. Just well executed and perfect. So, hey, anyone else got a question about the viral video world, about what it's done for Chris, about what goes through the mind of someone who's kind of holding all that attention? I mean, you got marriage offers from around the world, I remember, too.
Yeah, 5 or 6 offers of marriage and 5 or 6 offers to join the circus. And I don't even remember if there was overlaps. There might have been.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be my other piece of advice. It's okay to date a circus performer, but do not marry one.
That's important. I was going to bring that to my last question. But yeah.
I didn't mean to steal your thunder, Barry.
That's good. No, you did a great one. Well, good. Hey, let me just leave it open. Anyone else have anything? I know, Kevin, I think your mic's... Let me open it up. Kevin, you got anything to ask? Your mic, I think, was a little loud. Sarah muted you.
Yeah, his was kind of, he's on now.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'm
good, Kevin.
Hello.
You're on,
Kevin. Can hear you.
Okay, I'm stuck in a Starbucks in Malaysia, and there's a lot of buses going by.
Starbucks in Malaysia. Right?
I have that problem all the time.
So, Kevin, you have an interesting piece. I mean, you have a piece that got a lot of attention from America's Got Talent, and it's interesting to this is Kevin James, Chris. I don't know if you've seen his work, but he has a piece that got a lot of video coverage from America's Got Talent, and I know he's looking at creating something that speaks to a very specific niche of people and becoming celebrity and passed around in that world as a leader in that world. So, yeah, everyone on this call has some passion. Let me mute that because I feel like I'm yelling. There we go. Yeah, sorry, those buses are loud in Malaysia. You know, everyone on this group has some passion and some group they can appeal to. And you know, really what I'm encouraging you guys to do is to overlap your skills with your knowledge and insight into that niche. And, you know, let's become leaders. There's a number of people who have done it, and we've seen some examples. And, and we've gotten to hear a story of a guy who really did that from a ground-up position in a very innocent way, the same way salad dressings and hit songs are made. So let's keep that – go ahead, Chris.
And Geldof closed his presentation with a quote from a, and you might be able to find it, some Scottish mountain climber named Murray. I forget his first name.
Yeah.
And it was just a quote about commitment, about how when you, so many people stop themselves from taking the first step, and when you move, what was the exact quote there? When you move, Providence moves with you, and all manner of materials and resources that did not appear previously are at your disposal. So I really think, you know, taking that first step on any one of these projects and passions and being willing for it to not be, you know, you're not going to get there. I mean, you know, the first time that you try it is the first time you try it, you know, but you've got to be willing to take the first step and get over the hump of, some people think everything they do is great, but a lot of creative people bluster that. But when you do something and it's not great, you just, you know, I have a really hard time. People always say if you're a juggler, you must be great at video games. I can't play video games. And the reason I can't play video games is that I don't like sucking at anything in order to get good at it. You know,
yet you showed up night after night for four people in the theater. So there was something driving you there.
Exactly. Yeah. That excruciating failure I was willing to put myself through. Good point, Barry. I hadn't realized that was that commitment was easier for me to make. So when you find the thing that you're willing to show up for four people a night, mm-hmm. then you know you're on the right road.
awesome ending line. Actually, I'm here to connect the dots for you.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Barry. I'm gonna pop off now, but I hope that there was some stuff of value for your folks there, and don't get hit by a bus in Malaysia, Kevin.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, thanks.